I'm going to present an update on a talk I gave at CAPRA in Rio 2 years ago on a time domain method for computing the green function and some applications of that method to some open problems for Emery's. So to give you a really quick crash course on how green function methods work, the basic idea is that, from the Mises-Tacqua equation, we know we can write components of the self-force as integrals over the past history of derivatives of the green function. So for instance, if you wanted the self-force, the scalar self-force on a point particle at a point x prime, you would need to know the derivatives of the green function at every point x on the past world line. And this has a couple of really nice features. One is that the green function doesn't care what your world line looks like. It can be circular, eccentric, hyperbolic. The green function can handle them all equally well. Another is that according to the upper limit on the integration in the Mises-Tacqua equation, we shouldn't need to worry about local effects. We only need to worry about the tail part of the green function. So in principle, we shouldn't have to worry about any regularization. While all of this sounds very nice, the challenge remains in actually solving, for instance, the scalar wave equation for a global solution for the green function. So the method that we've been working on the last few years, and the full details of which you can find in our paper, is a characteristic initial value approach. We start with an LMO decomposition of, say, the scalar wave equation, and we convert to null coordinates u and v. Because we only care about the past history of the particle, we have a very obvious numerical domain to work in, the past light cone. And because we're working in u and v, which are characteristics of this PDE, we have a very obvious way of subdividing that domain using lines of constant u and v. So now, if we want to know the value of the green function or its derivatives at some point x on a past world line, we just evolve backwards in time from the light cone, and then we can interpolate along the world line. So in order to actually solve the equation at these grid points, we start by integrating it over a single cell. The first term can be integrated exactly, that's trivial. The second term needs to be done numerically. So we use methods from Baraksago to derive stencils that allow us to compute this term to any given order in the grid spacing H. So for instance, a second order stencil, a fourth order stencil, which actually includes the second order stencil, or a sixth order stencil. And this is everything we need in terms of numerics, and we could go to higher orders by just basically turning a crank. But we now see with higher order stencils, we need to provide more initial data. So the value on the light cone of the green function is known, it's just a constant. But we actually need to provide data inside the light cone. And to do this, we used a Hadamard series expansion near the light cone, which allowed us to compute sufficiently accurate initial data to get up to sixth order conversions for the green function. And you can use all of the same approach to actually compute the derivatives of the green function directly. So 2 years ago, we had some sample results on, say, a circular orbit, which you can see in black. You can already see the familiar singularity structure of the green function along the world line. But you can also see one of the problems that you run into with green function methods. So at very early times, we would expect the green function to fall off towards zero as we approach delta t equals zero. And instead, we see this increase. And that's because while in principle, we shouldn't have to worry about the direct part of the green function, in practical terms, it does crop up because we've done an LMO decomposition. Basically, the delta function in the direct part is smeared out by the fact that we're only resumming over a finite number of LMOs. So one of the most challenging things is to actually remove this direct part. And one thing that we did 2 years ago and that had been done previously is we used a quasi-local expansion of the tail part of the green function. Now you can see this works quite well, but it can be tricky as the region in which you're matching the two can be quite small. And in addition, you're not really comparing like with like. You're comparing an expansion of V with a numerical approximation of U plus V. So this is one of the things we've tried to improve on in subsequent work. Now at very late times to save computational time, we actually stitch on a late time tail expansion, which we have to really high order. And this works really nicely at late times. So that was 2 years ago. We had some sample self-force results on this circular orbit. We were already getting really good accuracy. And in particular, we were getting comparable accuracy to previous work, but with only about half as many L modes, which is a big computational saving already. What's changed since CAPRA 22? Well, the first thing that we did, and this is included in our paper, but some of these changes have actually happened since that paper went up. The first thing is we switched from quasi-local matching to subtracting the direct modes of the green function. So Casals et al. Developed a method of computing the L modes of the direct piece, and you then subtract them, and on the right you can see the cancellation you get on a mode-by-mode basis. This works really, really nicely for circular orbits and eccentric orbits, but recently we actually ran into trouble with hyperbolic orbits. So at very early times with this method, you need to use series expansions to get sufficiently accurate cancellation. But what we experienced was that these series expansions needed to be impractically high order in order to be sufficiently accurate. So what we've done is we've actually changed what we do at early times again to a method that combines direct mode subtraction with quasi-local matching. So we first subtract the direct modes that are computed numerically, and what we're left with is a numerical approximation of the tail part of the green function, V. Now it's much easier to match on the quasi-local expansion of V at early times. And you can see already here on a hyperbolic orbit how it easily overcomes the problems that you ran into with the series expansions of the direct modes. So we've tested this extensively on hyperbolic orbits and it's working really nicely. Another improvement, I've just mentioned it, we've gone from circular orbits to doing generic orbits. This is really where the green function starts to really come into its own. It doesn't care what your orbit looks like. It can do all of them just as easily. In addition, I left the potential a couple of slides ago undefined on purpose, because our method doesn't just work for the scalar equation. It works for any equation of the form that I showed a couple of slides ago. And in particular, we've already implemented it for the Reggie-Wheeler and Cirilli equations. So we have green functions for those, which have allowed us to compute gravitational wave fluxes already on circular orbits. And then the biggest improvement, and one that's the most exciting to me because it makes my life much easier, is that a lot of the code 2 years ago only existed as Mathematica notebooks. And now a lot of it has been converted to C. And combined with other streamlining and improvements to the code, the overall speed up is about two orders of magnitude overall. So to kind of show off some of these improvements and some applications of this method, I have a couple of in-progress applications that we've been working on recently. So one thing that we've been doing recently is applying it to unbound orbits. So here you can see two example orbits and the zeroth order scattering angles of those unbound orbits. The red one in particular is the same one looked at recently by Ali Long and Lior Barak in their paper on a time domain method for hyperbolic orbits, so that we can draw some comparisons with their gravitational results. So with the improved green function method, we can now compute the self-force on these orbits very quickly. Each of these curves has about 250 points, takes about a week per orbit, whereas 2 years ago, it probably would have taken me about a week per point. And now that we have this sort of data set, we can start doing some interesting science on hyperbolic encounters. So we can make a very, very preliminary estimate of a first order correction to the scattering angle. So I really want to stress that's very preliminary and could change. And then another really interesting thing is we can observe features in the self-force. In particular, you may have already spotted what looks like an oscillation in the R component of the self-force on the outgoing leg of the orbit. So Ali and Lior saw this in their paper as well recently, or something similar to it. And like they suggested, we think this might be a quasi-normal mode excitation, but we haven't looked at it in huge detail yet, so we can't say for certain. So another exciting application we've been working on is looking at some effects beyond first order. So this isn't the full second order effect that I'm going to talk about, but it is a contribution at second order. So you can show that the first order correction to the whirl line, where the zeroth order term here is just a geodesic, couples with second derivatives of the green function, which we have schemes to compute. And this allows us to compute a second order effect and compare it to the first order effects. So for instance, we've already done this on a series of circular orbits of increasing radius. So in black, you can see the first order conservative self-force divided by the first order dissipative self-force. And in red, you're seeing the second order dissipative piece divided by the first order dissipative self-force. And at large radii, you can see that the second order effect falls off very quickly, as you'd expect. But in fact, at small radii near separatrix, the second order effect actually appears to be more important than the first order conservative effect. And this could have implications for orbital evolution schemes in the future. But obviously that will depend on finding the rest of the second order contributions as well. And then a final application that I want to talk about really quickly is going beyond Schwarzschild. So in particular, we've been looking at trying to apply this method to the Tchaikovsky equation. So you can do a similar ELMO decomposition and conversion to U and V coordinates for the Tchaikovsky equation. And what you basically end up with are three new things that you need to incorporate into your numerical scheme. The first thing is you end up with first derivative terms, but these are actually relatively straightforward to handle. We just use Baraksa-Ago again to derive slightly different stencils for our numerics. And so long as you're a little bit more careful near the light cone, particularly these first internal rays that I've highlighted here, you can incorporate these easily and get a second order convergence scheme. And we already have that, and that's everything we would need to, say, get a Schwarzschild Tchaikovsky green function, which we have implemented. The next thing you get are coupling terms from other L-modes. Now, these at first seem like they're going to be tricky, but actually, because of how our method works, they're not that difficult to implement. Because at each point, we only depend on knowing the values at points which we, in principle, should already know, all we need to do is, at each point, we loop through all of the L modes. So when we take a step in our domain, we loop through all the L modes taking that same step before we move on to taking the next step. And this allows us to avoid the sort of matrix inversion methods that we've seen in a couple of other talks. Now, the last thing are these second derivative terms. And unfortunately, this is where the problems start to arise. So you can go and derive new stencils for these and implement C code as I naively did. And initially everything looks okay, but you'll quickly run into solutions that blow up. And we recently realized that the real problem with this is that this specific term changes the characteristics of the equation. So they're no longer lines of constant U and V. And as a result, the method as we've implemented it is ill-posed. So we don't have a full solution to this yet. We're still working on it, but we've already made some really promising progress with Tchaikovsky overall. And then just to finish up, as I've shown here, the scalar case in particular in Schwarzschild is starting to be effective at scale. And we've already seen some of the applications of the method. And the really exciting thing is that there's lots of different directions for this to go in the future. So on a practical note, the code can still get faster. And in particular, I'm really interested to see if it could be implemented on a GPU. I think even one GPU could lead to huge speed up. And there's other interesting applications such as populating surrogate models or maybe self-consistent evolution schemes. And in the long run, applying all of this in the Lorentz gauge. So I'll finish up there and thank you all for listening.
Thank you. Are there questions? You can raise your hand. Okay, Sam, please.
Hi, thanks. Interesting work. Boy, the calculation of the green function in Schwarzschild has come a long way since I last checked in. I thought I would just mention that my student Kunal Lobo has calculated the correction to the self-force correction to the scattering angle in the small angle limit. So if you make it barely deflect at all, he'll be talking about that on Thursday. I imagine it's pretty hard for your code to push the two points of the green function very far from the star, but if you from the black hole, but if you can do that, there'd be an interesting point of comparison with analytic work.
How far are we talking?
We did it to first order in M over B, you know, so that's, who knows how accurate that's going to be, you know, at a given value of M over B.
Yeah, I mean, I'd certainly be interested in pushing ours as far as we possibly can. So if there are things we can make comparisons with, even if just to see how accurate we can get out to those large distances, that'd be great.